Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast, episode 35. We're calling this Fighting in Hallways with Carolyn Daredevil. So that should give you a really good hint to what we're going to talk about this week. How you doing, Johnny?
Doing all right.
All right. So this week we're going to talk about Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And
Daredevil.
And Daredevil season one to get ready for season two. And then you threw a last minute change for a movie that I wasn't necessarily going to see, but you wanted to see it. And so I figured we'd talk about it.
Well, you read something, I guess.
Well, and I did. I read about it. But so we're going to talk about 10 Cloverfield Lane. And that will be a spoiler review, mini review. We're not going to spend, you know, an hour talking about it, but
okay.
Anyway, we'll try not to. All right, so
let's start. Do a non-spoiler and it would only be about 10 minutes.
Yeah, very true. We could do a spoiler one and only be about 10 minutes too. So all right, so there's a new X-Men Age of Apocalypse trailer that landed, I guess, today or late last night.
I think it was today because I haven't seen it yet.
It shows more mutant battling and stuff like that. It was interesting. I don't know if it makes me more or less excited for the movie or just kind of the same.
I don't know. I went to see Cloverfield last night, and the cardboard advertisement that they have in the hallway,
yeah,
actually made me excited because Apocalypse is taller than me.
Yeah, way taller.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, I can work with that.
So I was kind of bummed we didn't go see Cloverfield together because I was going to get you to take my picture with my arm around Cyclops. So, Oh, well. Yeah, so I saw Cloverfield on Monday because we had kind of talked about it over the weekend and then...
Schedules don't match up.
No. Anyway. All right, so... Wow, that was loud.
What, me or you?
No, me. I just yelled in my own ear. So The Walking Dead this week picks up right off where the last one left with Carol and Maggie being held hostage by Alicia Witt, of all people.
Yeah.
Did not expect to see her on the show. She is very angry. So did you watch Friday Night Lights?
Yeah. Yeah. She played the sister of...
She was the mom of Becky.
Was she the mom?
Yeah, it was the mom.
She always seemed like the sister.
Well, yeah, because she was trying to get with Tim Riggins the whole time. So I imagine it was that character in the zombie apocalypse the whole time, because she was kind of angry as it was on the show.
She can play angry pretty well.
She can. She's a good actress. She really is. When she shows up in things, she's usually very, very good.
Right.
So I was excited to see her. Because last week when I heard the voice, I was like, I didn't watch the previews.
Right.
So this week's episode, the first one I've ever watched live.
Right. Yeah. You said that to me and I was like, okay, that's weird.
We have the Sling TV. I usually just watch it later or on the VR or whatever.
Was there a reason?
I had nothing else to watch and it was 9 o'clock. I'm really happy I watched this one live because I think if I'd have seen or read anything about this, I would have been kind of upset.
Right.
This might have been the best episode of the season.
So far.
Just from a story standpoint. So far. As well. Yeah. So far. Yeah. Well, I said, you know, of the season. So that we've hit. I will say this. Since it's been back with the mid-season break and we're in this 2B or whatever, 6B season.
Right.
I've enjoyed every single episode.
Well, it's the build-up.
But I can't say that about any other time in this show where I've enjoyed consecutive episodes, let alone 5 in a row.
Do you think it's because of Negan?
Maybe. I think it's because they're sticking relatively close to the story, but throwing their own interpretation in.
Yeah.
Them going after the weapons cache is new. Like, that didn't happen in the comic, but it makes sense that that's the thought process that this version of Rick would have.
Right.
It was dark, man. It was real dark.
Yeah. Definitely dark.
So you had a great little analogy when you called it the lion and the witch in the wardrobe.
Yeah.
And you know, I just put a note saying Maggie and Carol show the saviors just why they should be scared.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it definitely was, you know, the lioness, the mother, protecting her unborn baby.
Her brood.
And then, Carol. Well, oh, Carol's literally a witch. I mean, she pulled the wool over everybody's eyes.
The transition she made to like season one Carol.
Oh yeah.
Was just
hands shaking while she's smoking a cigarette.
Melissa McBride should win the Emmy just like so. Put her up for the Emmy for lead female actress in a drama or comedy. Because you know it's funny.
Well, right. Yeah.
Anyway. No,
that's if you were rescuing her from Mars.
Right. So no, but they should. Matt Damon. If you've seen Team America, you know what that is.
Oh no.
Anyway, so she was Melissa McBride was amazing. Amazing in this.
She's episode. Very humble too because she was on
Talking Dead. I ended up watching Talking did you watch Dead it? Too, which I haven't watched Talking Dead since maybe season two.
What did you see at the very end? Like
I didn't finish.
Chris Hardwick was like telling her how good she was in that, and like they were cutting off, and you could hear her say, "It's not me, it's the writers."
Yeah,
well. She literally is like, "It's the writers," and I'm like, "That's pretty humble of a." Actor not to toot their own horn.
Yeah. So what else was she in? Was she on Dawson's Creek?
She was on like two episodes of Dawson's Creek. She's was a casting director or something.
Oh wow, okay.
And she knew Darabont because she had been in The Mist.
That's where I knew
she's
her from.
The one that's walking out of the door and says, you know, no one wants to walk a lady home or whatever.
Right.
And walks into the mist and then she shows up at the end.
Yeah.
As she survived. Yeah. So you know, yeah, she knew Darabont because of that.
Okay.
And I think she was like just supposed to be one of the guest characters and she's still there 6 years later.
So I was reading some stuff that she's now considered an unkillable character.
I'd say everybody's a killable character.
I was going to say, I don't necessarily agree with that. And I think we should like, when we wrap up, we should kind of talk about who we think Negan's going to kill.
Right.
And then be proven wrong next week and then come up with another far-fetched.
Is it next week?
No, but
it's 2 weeks out, isn't it?
Well, they're going to kill people and we'll have guests, someone, I'm sure.
Right.
Anyway, the saviors in this episode were really, really interesting because in the comic, they have their stuff together.
Right.
Right. This group did not seem to any of them really be on the same page, well, except for Alicia Witt and Smokey.
It seemed like they were on the same page, but they didn't like each other.
Oh, not at all.
None of them liked each other.
So, and then the guy who had Daryl's bike when he said, "I'm Negan."
Oh,
and
Primo.
Primo. And the whole "We are Negan."
Yeah.
You know, which there was a whole bunch of "We are Groot" things that popped up and, you know, was kind of funny. Yeah. But
well, that's because everybody was saying they were Negan.
Right.
And you know, it's like, okay.
It's very, very, I like the way they're handling it.
It's like, you know, she says, "Well, who's Negan?" And they look at her and they're like, "We're all Negan."
Yeah.
Because Negan would be, he kind of like comes off as a cult leader.
Yeah.
And that, so he's got the Jim Jones type thing going on.
Because in the comic, we don't get a lot of build up to who Negan is. He's mentioned.
People are afraid of him.
They mentioned him and they're afraid of him, but like we never meet any of the other saviors until their van gets pulled over.
Right.
And that's in issue 100, if you're interested in seeing the introduction of him. And from the minute he hits the page with Charlie Adler's art and just kind of the way Kirkman constructed the scene, it's really just wow.
Dark.
Very dark.
Very dark.
So I do like how they're building this up.
Yeah.
It's
more of the build up and I understand why they're doing it, you know, because they have to for TV purposes.
They can't just introduce him.
They can't just roll up on a van and swing away, Negan, swing away.
So they've done like build ups before, right?
Right.
So like we had a lot of build up to Sophia coming out of that barn.
Oh yeah.
But it was done poorly.
But the thing with that was unexpected, an unexpected build up.
But it was still done poorly. You know, it wasn't, it just dragged on for too long.
Yeah.
When, you know, it's the whole, well, he had her in the barn the whole time. He knew this mom was looking for her. What kind of monster is Herschel?
Right.
Well, he's not a monster at all, but, you know.
Right.
So there was that. You know, the whole thing with the governor. When is he going to attack and things like that? That was good build up. But again, like the whole, it's not Westbury. Was it Westbury?
Woodbury.
Thank you. Like the whole like Woodbury storyline kind of took away from the drama.
It was like two stories happened there where there was the Woodbury story with Philip.
Yeah.
You know, the governor, you know, Philip and Andrea and all that stuff, which was just a story. And then when he goes away and comes back, he's the governor at that point. And it's like that story is closer to what happened in the comic book. Mm-hmm. Whereas the whole thing where, you know, he kills everybody in the town and then everybody that's still at Woodbury, Rick and them assimilate into their group.
Right.
You know, it's a different, it was like a different take on it. And yeah, it wasted a lot of time.
Yeah. And, you know, like, but like you said, it was the two different stories. And,
yeah.
You know, like if they would have maybe put a little more effort into telling one really good story instead of two average stories. But
yeah.
You know, but yeah.
It's... Well, and they weren't, I mean, in the comic book, you can do a lot more bolder stuff. Or, you know, at the time they were doing that, they didn't think that they could do what they did in the comic book with the governor and that. And I think they could have, you know, the whole thing where he raped Michonne and Michonne got revenge on him and cut pieces of him off.
Right.
I think if they would have done that, it would have been more dramatic.
Yeah.
For the story, you know. But at that point, Michonne hadn't been introduced that long. So it was like, you know.
She was running around with Andrea in the woods, of all things.
Literally,
and,
like,
you know.
They're the two that meet the governor first.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but it's one of those things where sometimes I think the producers of the show, like, listen too much to the fans.
Right.
And it's like, don't listen to the fans as much as, you know, stick to the outline of the story. Because that's all they got to do is follow the outline of the comic book. Not do the complete adaption of the comic book, but just follow the outline.
Yeah, I mean, you said it for the last couple weeks. We've been talking about this again. Yeah. Is, you know, when it's at its best, it's when the comic happens.
Right.
But then they put their own special twist on it.
Yeah. And like I've said, that special twist is for people like me where I've been reading the comic book since the beginning.
Right.
And if they did a straight adaptation, I'd just be like, I don't have to watch this.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and that's why I've been really enjoying this because at this point, it's my favorite arc. The whole No Way Out, the Hilltop, you know, it makes me wonder like how they're going to introduce the character Ezekiel.
Right.
Next season, you know.
CGI Tiger.
The all-out war storyline.
Yeah, you know? that'll
like,
be...
Like, how is that going to go down? Who's going to live? Who's going to die?
Well, and it's the whole thing where they've said the show will go 7 or 8 seasons.
Okay.
So it's like...
So we're in 6 right now?
We're at 6. So how do you end this show?
I think you end it where the time jump happened in the comic. If they're going just, 7 or 8 seasons, and that's... You know, how that ends is how they wrap it up.
Like,
and they live happily ever after.
Societies come back and, you know, they're horse and buggies.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah. I mean, that's one way to end it.
If that's how they want to do it.
Another way to end it is just kill everybody.
Just they all die.
Kill everybody.
So the zombies take over.
That would be it. Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Like, and I think it would fit with the tone of the show. So,
like I said... That I've told you that one time where the end of the series could either be, you know, if Daryl survived to the end.
Yeah.
Or if Carl survived to the end on top of a car surrounded by zombies and it goes to black and all that you hear is either the bolt go off. No, you either hear the bolt going off of the crossbow or the gun, you know. Or Carl's got Rick's Colt and then just
Carl's
shooting.
Carl's got a gun.
Yeah, so I mean that would be a cool ending.
Yeah, that would,
because I mean, you know, on this show everybody dies.
All right, so real quick, just going into the introduction of Negan and the inevitable cast member who's going to be killed off, who do you think it is?
It could be Glenn. Just because of the tease midway in the season. Who would I prefer? Like a preference?
Who would you prefer?
Daryl.
Yeah.
Just because him and Rick are so close now,
mm-hmm.
brothers.
Yeah.
That this would be the offset of Rick losing it again.
Because Rick doesn't have the relationship with Glenn that he had in the comic.
Right, yeah.
Like, Glenn was his confidant.
Glenn was Daryl in the comic.
And Michonne is his confidant right now.
Right.
And, like, you know, she's replaced Andrea in the comic.
I don't see them killing her.
I don't think they will, because she's finally interesting.
I can see somebody's going to die this week. I really get the feeling that somebody's going to die this week that died in the comic book about this time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know.
No, I agree. I think I would like
one of
to
my
see it be
characters.
I would like it to be Daryl.
Yeah.
To be honest.
I just think it would have a dramatic effect on the show and on the fan base.
I've never been a huge Daryl fan anyway. So,
I like the character, but the character is just a mixture of a lot of different characters.
I like Norman Reedus.
Yeah.
So there's that. But, you know, as far as Daryl goes, it always seems, he's always got one more arrow. And it's like, all right, come on.
But so does Arrow.
Well, that's a whole nother argument. Anyway.
No, it's just one. Well, and that's the thing is, like, this season, it seems like he doesn't have just one more arrow. He lost his whole, you know, his whole getup.
Yeah.
And that, so
it's, well, now, like, he has the bike back.
The bike's back. So, but where's the crossbow?
Who knows?
God, that would be the way to do it. You know, it's a spoiler if you don't know the spoiler, so just stop listening for probably a couple minutes.
Just hold your ears and go la 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 la.
So Abraham's probably going to die this week.
Yes.
If he got shot by the crossbow, it would be cooler.
It would be cool.
Yeah, because it's going to be the person who stole the crossbow.
Right.
He is that character that's been confirmed.
Dwight, right?
Dwight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing that guy come back with ironed off face.
So, do you think they'll do that?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
I think it'll be for the reason of stealing the penicillin and not for the reason that happened in the comic
book. Yeah, because the stealing thing, because somebody had...
Yeah, she was missing the...
part of her finger.
She was the... the Onion Knight from Game of Thrones. So
yeah, I mean, that was just kind of cool that, you know, if they steal, they get punished.
Yeah.
You know, the Hammurabi's Law.
Yeah.
An eye for an eye.
Yep, yep, yep.
So yeah, but I do think that Abraham's probably going to die this week.
Yeah.
Because it looked like him and Eugene were out.
Yeah, they were
together and
chumming along. And
exactly like it happened in the book.
And they make a pretty startling discovery.
Plus he's just had that arc where you're like, yeah, he's gonna die.
Yeah.
It's like the Battlestar Galactic arc where everybody's like, you know, somebody does something really awesome, two
right.
episodes later they're dead.
What was when, like, Candace McClure, her character?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't see that coming at all. But she had her last great day.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I should have seen that coming.
Gonna blow my head
off. But yeah. She had her last great day with Lee and everything. All right, so Walking Dead's been good. One other bit of Walking Dead news that you shared with me.
Oh, yeah.
Is the Universal Studios Hollywood.
Yeah, it's a permanent exhibit.
Permanent. And it's a permanent Walking Dead attraction, and it's a zombie-filled Halloween maze.
Yeah, so they've done this thing, like, during Halloween
season. Like, October, during the month of October and things
like
that.
And I guess it's just, you know, popular enough that they're gonna test it out. It looks like a haunted house.
Yeah,
like the pictures they showed on Talking Dead and that, it looks like a haunted house, and literally, like, the don't open dead inside doors there, and, like, they showed zombies actually pushing the door open so you see them
don't dead open inside.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just like they literally had pieces from different episodes.
Cool.
In there. So, I mean, you know, it kind of looks cool. And, I mean, if they do it well enough, maybe it'll get in Florida. And, you know.
Man, I would suck in Florida. Like, for the people dressed as zombies.
Yeah.
All right. And then
I'm wondering if Nicotero, if anybody from KMB is going to.
I assume they would just
that would
to
be cool.
stay quote unquote on brand. And then one last thing about this week's episode.
Yeah.
When Carol and Maggie were locked in that room, did you recognize the room?
What do you mean?
When they were in the, where they were, like,
the kill
locked
room?
Up. Yeah.
No. What was I supposed to?
It was the room from Saw.
Vaguely.
No, it was. It was like they.
No, they
there
said.
There was stuff.
That room
I was reading
that
the
they
thing,
had.
So. Oh, no, not the kill room. The one where they were, like, where it was just like the toilet when they were tied up and stuff like that.
I don't remember them being.
Well, one of the rooms they were in was the room from Saw.
Oh, okay.
So
well,
pretty,
they said the
cool
room that they shot most everything in.
Yeah.
the walls actually folded in and out.
Cool.
So they could move stuff around and that. So the hallway wasn't the hallway. Yeah. It was, you know, and that hallway was awesome.
The hallway was great. And so to go with our title this week, yeah, with the fighting in hallways, because we're going to talk about the iconic Daredevil fight scene in the hallway. This was great. Well, the two of them fighting Alicia Witt, and like the way they use the zombies.
And the other girl too.
Well, like, yeah, I forgot about her.
The other girl's fighting Maggie, and like, you know, Carol just comes around the corner and pops her.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
I loved how those women thought that Carol and Maggie were soft.
Yeah.
And Carol and Maggie are just the whole time like, Carol sharpening that crucifix.
And that's because they wrote it perfectly.
Maggie got herself out.
Where they're just
out.
Hanging out, yeah, while everybody else is out killing everybody. Yeah. And they're just there. Yeah. And it was like, you know, that's where I think the whole weakness thing came in. And it's like, no, they're you know, like I said.
They're two of the best killers on the show.
I told you, I said those four were dead before they even got into that building.
Yeah. Oh, they were dead when they didn't shoot them in the woods. They kind of signed their own death warrants there.
So, yeah, it was just one of those things where, like, Alicia Witt probably had one of the most gruesome deaths on that.
That was rough, though. The whole, like, thing biting her face off.
Well, did you watch the part on Talking Dead where she talked about the blood?
No, I didn't get that far.
So she said that they had packed her neck, too.
Okay.
Like, with the explosive gel packs and that. And she said when they started shooting the scene, she gets bit. And it was supposed to be the whole thing was going to go, like he was going to bite her neck and that, before he even got to bite her neck, because she said the guy really bites into her cheek. It exploded, and she said it just ran down her entire front side. She said that's why it wasn't in there, because they didn't want to repack it and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine cleaning all that
up.
Yeah,
I'm like, man, that's got to be like, you got all this fake blood running down your front side.
Damn it. So, anyway.
Yeah, she... you know, would have been cool to keep around for a few more episodes, I think.
Yeah, but I think so. Not Hunger Games. The 100 did this, where they brought in a big character, a big actress, and killed her in the episode that she was introduced. Like, I think that's cool.
Yeah.
I like that they do that, because there's no sacred cows. Because
it's kind of a distraction at the same time, because it's like, oh, I know who that is.
Right.
You know, she's been on enough stuff that you know who she is. It was a good episode.
It was great. All right, so moving on. 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Did you want to talk that or Daredevil?
we'll finish with Daredevil.
Okay.
So 10 Cloverfield Lane. Like, I'm just going to put it out there. The original Cloverfield, I hated the movie.
Really?
I hated it. Everything about it. I got sick watching it.
Okay.
Which, you know me, I feel just as comfortable upside down as I do right side up. I like roller coasters. I like spinning in circles.
Sure.
You know? I'll take the kid bot in the backyard and I'll spin her around until she throws up.
Right.
I got literally ill watching the movie. Which just because the shaky cam, man.
Huh.
And
it
like,
didn't bother me at all.
I even at one point watching it, because you know the row I like to sit in?
Yeah.
I moved into the top row behind that.
Wow.
So I would be higher than eye level with the screen.
Right.
And it was worse. So there's that. I went into the original Cloverfield expecting it to be our generation's Godzilla.
Okay.
Like, I wanted to see this, because we saw pictures of the monster.
Right.
We read about the monster. We saw the cool, like, the augmented reality game that they put together.
See,
where
and I avoided
you
everything.
You see the thing crashing. And
right.
You know, so I went in with really high expectations. And, you know, I was a big fan of JJ then.
Right.
I walked out of that movie wanting to kick JJ in the taint.
But he didn't direct it.
No, but he was. It's Bad Robot, and his name was attached.
Right.
Because it was Matthew Reeves, who was one of the producers of 10 Cloverfield Lane. So that being said, when I saw Cloverfield rear its ugly head again.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, it's like, I was conflicted because I love John Goodman. He's one of my all-time favorite actors. You know, Roseanne's one of my favorite shows. Dan Connor was obviously my favorite character. And I want to do whatever to support him. And then the director of this is a freshman director named Dan Trachtenberg.
Right.
And you may know him, you probably don't, but like, you know, listener, you might know him. He did this amazing short film about Portal.
Oh, okay.
Which was great. It was fun. It was story driven, but like effects heavy.
Right.
It's like 9 minutes, kind of like that Power Ranger movie you shared with me.
Yeah.
So, and then
I know what you're talking about, but I've never seen it.
And then he was, one of the three hosts on my all time favorite podcast called The Totally Rad Show.
Okay. Now that I've heard of, yeah.
So, yeah. You know, him and Alex Albrecht and Jeff Cannata. And
so what does he, like, is he, I think I looked up, he does commercials.
He's been doing commercials for the last few years.
Okay.
So this is his first feature. So I wanted to support that because I really like the guy.
Definitely a good movie to bring in a new director. I mean, it wasn't too effects heavy. It wasn't a lot of actors.
Well, and especially a new director who excels at storytelling.
Right.
Because, like, you know, he's like, and I think he gets that from the commercial because he doesn't have a lot of time to get right. his story across. But yeah, so.
Yeah, you got to sell a lot in 25 to 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
So, I mean, like, David Fincher did music videos before he did Seven. So.
And I mean, you know, if you look at his early stuff, it looks like music videos.
Yeah. Oh, Fight Club.
Alien 3 and Fight Club look like music videos.
So. Okay, so I liked the movie overall. I thought it was really, really good. The things I've... Oh, sorry, guys. I just smacked my microphone.
Wow.
Get in line. Anyway, the things I read about it online, there was a lot of, like, it was just, like, polar opposites.
Oh,
like,
okay.
There haven't been, like, I haven't seen, and I might be wrong, let me know. There doesn't seem to be a lot of, like, moderates, like me, like, in the middle. Because, like, I'll be honest, there wasn't a whole lot I didn't like about it. I definitely saw some missed opportunities that we'll talk about when we do some spoiler stuff.
Yeah.
But the acting was amazing. You know, John Goodman as Howard.
Yeah.
Was, like, he should win an award for this. He really should. He should win an Oscar. I'm going to be 100% honest.
Really?
Like, I think he was that good. I mean, okay. he took, like, he's this wholesome guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean... You have his character from The Big Lebowski that's super iconic.
But, right.
You know, I mean, this was evil Dan Connor.
Yeah.
Because he
that's
loved,
what you said.
He
you
loved his
that.
Family. And he looked at Emmett and Michelle as family, even though Emmett annoyed the piss out of him.
Right.
But, like, he truly wanted to take care of these people.
Yeah.
Of course, he wanted it all on his terms.
Right.
And that's where the evilness you know, kind of the spike came from and things like that. But yeah, the acting was amazing. It looked great. You know, Dan Trachtenberg has a bright future ahead of him. Cause I mean, the movie did well financially considering, you know, we just heard about it like 4 weeks ago before it came out. It was, you know, it was a great, just kind of under the radar thing that it's like, we're releasing this. Bam. Here it is. But what did you think?
I really enjoyed it. I was, you know, I was going in without any expectations, and that the Cloverfield name didn't really affect it for me because I did like Cloverfield.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for what it was, it's a decent movie.
All I rooted for in Cloverfield was for that monster to eat those goddamn kids.
Well, my whole thing with, like, that movie, and I was talking to somebody about this earlier, that movie had a lot of, like, loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like there wasn't like there was a story going around about how that was a baby monster and it was just it was totally panicking and that's what it was doing when it was tearing through the city. And I told my friend, I said, I wish they would have done that as the story.
Yeah.
And at the end there would have been like it would have cut from their footage to you like military footage and shown either that baby getting killed and a military guy turning around and there's a bigger monster standing there, or that baby going out into the water and Godzilla, you know, Godzilla Mamo's waiting out in the water.
Because the monster looked awesome.
Oh, yeah. The design on the monster is great.
It had the little flea things that fell off it. And if it bit you, you exploded.
Yeah.
Like, that was cool.
So here's my thought.
Okay.
Cloverfield is just a name like Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
And I think that they should keep doing these.
Right.
Like different type, because this felt like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, so I have, if Cloverfield is a description of a strange and terrifying event, I'm definitely interested to see what they have next.
Yeah.
And since I hated the original so much, I would like to see them revisit the Godzilla-esque monster type story and tell it right. So we're right on the same
robots.
Page there.
The robots. Next one will be robots.
Yeah. So, But I'm really happy I saw this on the big screen.
Yeah.
I'm really happy it didn't have shaky cam.
Oh, yeah. That was the one thing where I was like, this is a different story because there is no shaky
cam. It's not found footage, you know, like hopefully
the shakiest thing in the whole movie is when her car gets hit and wrecks.
And that's a, that was a really cool like car crash scene because you felt. Interesting thing. Bradley Cooper was the voice of her boyfriend.
Yeah, I seen that.
Which I didn't even realize until the credits. So that
sound like Bradley Cooper.
No.
So it didn't sound like Rocket either.
No. But yeah. All right. So do you want to talk some spoilers real quick?
We can.
Okay. So if you're listening to this, we're going to start talking about spoilers for probably the next couple minutes.
Probably about 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah. So go ahead and skip ahead. So now. All right. So I'm just going to jump to the thing that bothered me the most.
Okay.
Is at the end when Michelle is driving towards Houston, right?
Yeah.
She's defeated the alien spaceship with a, you know, $8,800 bottle of, you know,
was that Glenlivet?
Yeah, something. Yeah. It was like, you know, it was really good whiskey or scotch or whatever. And she's driving towards Houston to go help, right? And the lightning flashes and you see the spaceships.
Yeah.
That should have been Cloverfield Monsters.
Yeah.
Just to tie it together a little bit, because then it could all be like, you know, like, so the Cloverfield Monster, because like the ARG stuff, it crashed to Earth.
Right.
Like it was the advanced team type of a thing.
Right.
I think that would have been cool. I would have. Yeah. I just felt like that was a missed opportunity. Now, that was freaking awesome when that happened.
Yeah, when the lightning flashes and you see like a mothership.
You see like four of them, and like there were a bunch of them.
I wasn't paying that close attention. So, I just seen the one in the foreground. Okay,
so in like just, I went to the Wikipedia page and I read everything about it, so I knew what was going to happen going in.
Okay,
which helped me enjoy this more.
Okay,
because if I wouldn't have done that, and I'm not one who's big on spoilers. I mean, we all know about my media blackouts. Like I haven't watched anything about Daredevil.
Okay.
I haven't even watched one trailer. But
just so you know, the Punisher's in it.
I know the Punisher's in it, but I can't, like, you know, there's no way I would miss that, or I could block that out. But anyway, knowing this had me just relaxed and ready to enjoy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when we saw Star Wars, you know? Like, I was a little on edge the first time, and the second time I went to see it, I just fell
head over heels in love. Yeah, because you wouldn't have seen it the next day, pretty much.
Well, because the kid bought me to see it, so. I felt like that was a huge miss.
Going in with no expectations?
Yeah.
I was totally relaxed with it, you know.
But the aliens were a big surprise.
Were they?
Well, they were a big surprise in the way that they actually did aliens.
Yeah.
And that we didn't see, like, other than the little dune sandworm thing running around, which I liked the reference to that earlier, and it's like, oh, this is a thing.
Yeah.
The ship was cool.
Yeah. The ship was alive.
Yeah, so it was kind of like the Leviathan in the Avengers. You know, it was like this armored, floating.
Yeah, because it just shoots the, I called it a dog.
Yeah.
It just shoots the dog off because of all the noise.
Yeah.
From, you know. She had the best line when she stands up on top of the roof of that truck and goes, really?
Yeah. Just the delivery of it.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's got that big duck on her.
Yeah.
Like that big yellow duck, and she's in the red, like, shower curtain that she made into a hat.
Right. Yeah. Suit. Yeah.
So that, like, so her and John Gallagher Jr., who played Emmett, he was in Newsroom. That's probably the thing he's most.
I was like, going to say, he was familiar, but he wasn't familiar.
He played Jim. James Harper, Guardian, if you will, on Newsroom. I don't think they really tied that together.
No, that's just a common name.
Yeah. But anyway, so he was great on Newsroom. I loved him as this character.
I thought
the good old boy thing. Yep. And, you know, I think he saw in Michelle kind of a kindred, like, I want to get away from whatever it is that's like been holding my life back or whatever.
Right.
But she had the stones to do it. And
he didn't,
he carried around the bus ticket that he got in high school that he never used.
He did like carrying around regret. Really? Yeah. Was.
I mean, he just carried it in his pocket everywhere he went.
Yeah. That literally is like a ball and chain in his pocket. I was surprised that they killed him.
Yeah, and especially the way.
Oh, man, that was fast, that was too.
It just came from out of nowhere. It was, you know...
I accept your apology.
So Howard found the materials they were using to make the hazmat suit, which, of course, in his bunker, he's got how to make a gas mask, how to make a hazmat suit.
Sure, yeah, he was one of those guys.
He was so prepared. that was his eventual downfall.
Yeah.
I mean, even having the tank of Tanko acid, you know, to
well, and get the rid tank of acid thing, like, you know, when the air filter goes down.
Right.
And she goes up and finds that somebody had scratched "help me" on the window.
Yeah.
And found the earring and it thought it was his daughter's earring because that's the picture he showed that was his daughter. I'm like, he used that acid to get rid of that girl too.
Oh yeah.
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 I'm just like, man, that comes back to bite him in the ass.
So I wonder, like, how long was he, like, bringing people down there? And,
well, you
know, is that what happened to his wife and daughter? Or did they really leave?
I think they actually had been gone, and that's what broke him.
Yeah.
And he was, if the storyline, like, would have been a little bit more, like, open to how the bunker was built.
Right.
I think that she left with the daughter when the bunker was being built.
Long before the aliens got
there. Yeah. Long before any of that idea. He was already becoming paranoid and all that. And, you know, that story's about people like that. Usually, like, that's where that story goes, is people become paranoid like that, and then their family can't handle it and either leave or, you know, lock the person up.
Yeah.
And then he was just sane enough that, you know, they couldn't have locked him up, but he, you know, was more crazy than anybody ever thought.
Yeah. I mean, he was just out of his mind.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, all in all, like I said, I enjoyed it. I'm glad I saw it. I'd probably watch it again.
Oh yeah. It'll probably be one, like, you know, I tell you there's
the Black Friday deals. Yeah.
I'll buy it. Probably not even Black Friday. If it's a good deal when it comes out, I probably will buy it.
Yeah, cool.
And that, so yeah, it definitely was a fun movie.
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, especially going in with the baggage that I was thinking
about it was like on a level of no feeling at all, satisfied, highly satisfied, not satisfied, and highly not satisfied. I would say I was highly satisfied.
All right,
I walked out of it going, that was worth seeing.
Yeah, it was definitely worth seeing.
Yeah.
I even had a free movie ticket to see it with, so I didn't even have to pay for it. So I was even, like, I was just that much happier that I got a free movie, and it was a good one.
Right, yeah, and it was just one of those things where the ending paid off because she had been through so much crap, and, you know, the radio thing saying, you know, there's safety in this area, and we need help
in this area.
We're fighting in Houston, and we need help.
Well, and I think I told you because I told you I read it,
like,
the stuff, and I said one of the things I wanted to see is how they were going to pull off the ending.
Right.
And I think I even told you that, where it's, you know, like, I know how this ends, but I want to see how they do it. Because, like, reading it and seeing it are two entirely
different things. Oh, yeah. I'm sure, like, you know, the description, I haven't looked.
She was in the shed. And, you know, the things poking around and just the things that she does. One thing that did bother me, though, is when Susan Cryer's character was banging on the door.
Yeah.
Like, let me in. There's no way that car's battery still worked because the lights were on behind her.
Yeah.
So that's all. Unless it's one of those cars. Where
they said she had been out there for a while. So maybe she turned her lights off. She locked the damn doors.
I was thinking maybe it's one of those cars that you turn off and you lock and the lights stay on for a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, that was one of those things where it's like, no way.
You know, that's just nitpicky, I guess.
It was just, honestly, it just kind of stood out to me.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a second. And I was like wagging
my finger. Why is battery still, you know?
But.
Well, and at least they didn't do the thing that's done a lot where she flips down the visor and the keys fall out.
Yeah, I like that she had to go back and feel around in her pocket.
For her, in his truck. There were no keys.
That was great.
And it's like, because he had them on his belt loop. And it's like, you know, he was that paranoid that he wouldn't leave a set of keys out there.
And that was cool how it picked the truck up and then dropped
it. Oh, yeah.
It was cool. And then when she was pulling out at the end, did you notice, like, the car hit the curb and, like, the fender fell, the front like bumper fell off.
No, I didn't.
But then
see that.
Like later on, like it was still there.
I thought she hit the
Is it because she hit the mailbox? Is that what I saw?
Yeah,
because it looked like
you see what you seen was the stick from the mailbox hit the ground, and then the mailbox like,
which was a great shot.
That was a great
It was the mailbox, and then
it's
you
like,
see
they put the movie poster in the movie.
You see the taillights driving away. It was so cool. All right. So go see it.
Yeah.
I mean, just hands down. Like, it's a lot of fun. All right. Now, to our main topic this week.
Yeah.
First off, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Or, well, I guess third off in this case, because we've already talked about two other things. We're recording this on Thursday. By the time you hear this, Daredevil Season 2 will be out.
It hits at midnight tonight?
Yeah.
Is that right?
So, we both have been kind of rewatching it. I kind of just cherry picked episodes because I've been through it a couple times already.
Right.
And I think you, did you say you hadn't seen it since the first time you saw
it? No, I
hadn't. Yeah, you never rewatched it.
No.
So
it's just one of those things where there's so much stuff on that it's like hard to go back and watch a series. And this week it was just easy to do.
Yeah. I mean, so for Daredevil, we just kind of want to share some of our favorite moments from season one.
Yeah.
We want to maybe tell people a little bit about who Elektra is, who the Punisher is, and maybe we can guess how this will fit in with Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Iron Fist.
And with the first season.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, because when this first one came out, there was no guarantee we were getting anything else.
Right. Yeah.
So now that it's this actual thing, and then there's an actual Daredevil poster raffle that you shared with me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's signed by like 20 cast members.
Yeah.
And there's a link to that in the show notes. So go to infamouspodcast.com and go to the show page. And it's there.
It's for a good cause.
And so. It is for a good cause. Yeah. And you get this awesome looking poster that's signed by pretty much the entire cast.
Yeah. I think it's most of the first season cast and writers and directors and stuff.
So, yeah. All right. So one of the things that's different with season two is Stephen S. DeKnight is not the showrunner.
Right.
But the guys who are doing it, were part of the production crew from season one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not worried. Like I know I've had a couple of friends who were really concerned that Stephen S. DeKnight's not going to be involved, but like, he's still kind of like, you know, he's a consultant and,
right.
You know, I mean, it's the world he
well,
built.
Well, it's one of those things where his production team
and
is
it's
still
his
there.
Production
so,
team, so,
you know, and I mean, if you watch it all the way to the end, there are like two or three production companies.
Oh yeah.
Tied to it, so it's not like, you know, yeah, he was the showrunner, but he didn't make all the decisions.
No, and he only directed like one or two episodes,
right?
So, and I think he only wrote one, if I remember correctly. It might be in your notes there.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
So, you know, Drew Goddard was involved really early on.
He wrote
a couple episodes. Stephen S. DeKnight wrote, let's see, one, two, three. So he wrote the finale. He was one of the co-writers on The Path to the Righteous, which was episode 11. And then he wrote episode 8, Shadows in the Glass. But yeah. All right. So I wrote down some key moments that I really enjoyed. And they're kind of in no particular order. So one, the hallway fight when he's going to rescue the kid that the Russians stole. That was in episode 2, Cutman.
Yeah,
it was a continuous shot.
Awesome.
It was so well choreographed. And then watching him get like his second and third and fourth wind as he goes through and he's fighting fresh guys. And, you know, it's all because he's got such strong willpower to save this kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, that was great. When he fought Nobu in episode 9, Speak of the Devil.
Yeah.
That's one of the more brutal fights in any martial arts.
It's a well-cut fight because it bounces around the whole episode.
Right.
And it's like literally like, you know, because of his origin with Jack Murdoch being a boxer.
Right.
It literally is like you're going around bouncing around
it's
the
rounds.
Boxing ring.
It's rounds,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's like,
and you know.
And I mean, the cool thing is they don't reveal it's Nobu until like near the end of the fight. And then you're like, holy crap, this guy like... Because of what happened with Stick showing up and, you know, Nobu's wanting to get revenge and what Fisk kind of insults him by saying, just get your best fighter to take him out. Well, Nobu's best fighter is going to be Nobu.
Right, right. So It was interesting. And then obviously the way it ended with Matt inadvertently killing him.
Yeah.
You know, it was, and it was more Nobu kind of killed himself right. with the errant, you know, throw of that really cool ninja dagger spiky thing.
Yeah.
Stick appears, episode 7, Stick.
Yeah.
Stick was awesome. Who was the actor?
Scott Glenn.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Scott Glenn was great. Perfect casting.
Yeah.
And you know, the relationship that Matt tried to have with Stick.
Yeah.
And then when Stick's like, I can't teach you, you're too soft. Like, he even shows up and he's like, silk sheets, really?
Right.
You know, and Matt's
yeah,
like,
well, he Matt's just like, gives him the whole, feels like, you know, sandpaper. You're too much of this world and not enough of the world where the war's coming.
Right.
Like, he keeps talking about the war.
And we have the little thing at the end of Stick's episode where he's talking to
a master of some
yeah,
sort.
Yeah, an unknown master. And I think we'll see some of that in this season.
Right.
I think because of Gal, that will translate into some of the stuff from
Iron
Fist.
Well, and I think that Nobu, like what Nobu was involved with, will tie to...
Do you think it's the hand?
It's the hand, yeah. It's definitely... You haven't seen any trailers. I've seen trailers. Okay,
so...
So the hand is showing up. Okay. I mean, it's definitely...
Well, I mean, Elektra is going to be on the show, so obviously
the hand
is involved,
has to show
so,
up, right.
Because of what happens with her. Okay, Stick appears. Fisk kills Ben Urich.
Yeah. All
right, so first off, the fact that they even used Ben Urich was a surprise to me, because if you don't know, he's a Spider-Man character. He was a reporter on from the Daily Bugle.
Right.
He showed up a lot in the Daredevil universe as well. But he was mainly...
The Marvel Knights era,
yeah,
he was more of a Daredevil character. Like, he hadn't been in Spider-Man
in a while.
But
he started as a Spider-Man
character. Originally, he was in Spider-Man.
In the Ben Affleck movie, he was played by Joey Pantoliano.
Right.
So,
Joey Pants.
And this was what's his name?
Vonda Curtis Hall.
Yeah. Who is awesome. He was on a show called Fastlane with Bill Bellamy and Peter
Facinelli. Yeah, yeah, you've got
He was Bill Bellamy's older brother. I love that show. It's, you know.
He's been in a lot of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, he shows up, and every time you see him, he's awesome.
Yeah.
He's a really, really good actor, and this was probably my favorite thing he's ever done. But the way, so he was in episode 12, it's called The Ones We Leave Behind, just the brutality of Fisk, where, like, he's we've seen these moments where he breaks, like when he killed the Russian brother,
right?
And, you know, when he gets mad at Owsley and you know, that kind of stuff. There was nothing like this.
I
mean, this was cold-blooded. This was, you know, you hurt my mommy, or you scared my mommy.
Mama's boy.
Yeah. So that was really cool. And then let's see, in the last episode, Daredevil, when he gets his suit.
Yeah.
It was really cool. I almost didn't think they were going to show that. And we talked about this a little bit. I thought even if they stuck with the black ninja costume all the way through, and maybe the final scene that we see is him in some version of the suit, would be cool.
There's no way that he could have beat Fisk without that suit.
And it was obvious because like watching like the sparks fly off when Fisk is hitting him with his own sticks and everything.
Yeah. It's just one of those things where, like, you know, even he, after fighting Nobu and tries to fight Fisk, and just Fisk just beats the crap out of him.
And this goes into it, is the fight with Fisk.
Yeah.
Was, again, as well, if not, it might be one of the best choreographed fights ever on TV. Vincent D'Onofrio was way more involved with that than I thought he would be.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely one of those things where, and, you know, hopefully we do see him show up in the season 2.
I can't imagine we won't.
Jail.
Yeah.
You know, I think it'd be cool if, like, you know, he tries to hire Nelson and Murdoch.
Yeah.
I think that would be, like, an interesting way.
I think we'll, I mean, just like in the comics, when he ends up in jail, we'll see him running things.
Right,
you know.
Well, Vanessa is there, so, you know, that's a different take on that.
On Vanessa.
Yeah.
Much different. Like, you know, she was always kind of oblivious to who he really was.
Right.
And in this version of Vanessa,
she kind of manipulates him.
She embraced it, really. It was, she was awesome. And that was, I don't even know how to say her name.
Ayelet Zerrer.
Okay.
That's
sure.
What, I mean, say it like it's spelled kind of thing.
She was awesome. You know, we were talking before we even started with Wesley, his friend.
Right.
He was great. One of the, for me, one of the best parts of the show.
Which I think was he even in the comic books at all?
I don't remember.
I don't remember him at all.
All right. And then my last kind of like just key standout moment. Well, I have two more. One was in episode 3, A Rabbit in a Snowstorm.
Yeah.
The courtroom scene. That's what really hooked me into the series, because in that whole episode, we got to see him be Daredevil.
Right.
This was the first time we got to see him be badass Matt Murdock.
Yeah.
And you know, I always look for that balance, you know.
It's kind of like I told you, have you ever seen the director's cut? Of
yeah. The yeah. That's the only one I have. I don't. Have
yeah. And if they would have done that and released it that way, I think it would have made that, whole storyline a little better.
Yeah. But, so that really, Rabbit in a Snowstorm, that really stood out. And then the entire episode of Nelson versus Murdoch, episode 10.
Which is the one where
Foggy has found out at the end of episode 9 after Nobu basically eviscerates Matt.
Right.
And, you know, he's been impaled and
Claire came and saved him. Yeah, he finds him at the end of that episode, and then the whole next episode is just them in a room.
And it's just the two of them in a room. And it's like, are you even blind?
Yeah.
You know? Like, have you been lying to me our whole life? And then it flashes back to them in law school. And you right. understand why they're brothers. And the whole avocados at law
thing. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it was
well, the awesome. Whole Greek girl thing. When they say the Greek girl thing, I'm like, sold! I'm like, they actually said that Elektra's Greek.
And, you know, he's like, Foggy's taking Punjabi because he likes a girl. And then Matt takes Spanish. And he's like, oh, well, it was because of that Greek girl. And he's like, why didn't you take Greek? Well, she's Greek. She already speaks Greek.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was great. And, I really enjoyed that. And watching Charlie Cox was at his best when he was across from Eldon Henson.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Henson. Yeah. Eldon Henson.
You know, Fuller from the Mighty Ducks.
You're right.
So, you know, I think the two of them brought out just these really special performances out of each other. And I'm happy the way they reconciled at the end, because in the comic, Foggy at times has a lot of problems with Matt as Daredevil.
Right.
A lot of times he's okay with it, but it's a very fluid situation.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they captured that.
Right.
So, but we talked earlier in the week kind of about this and you know, where this version of Daredevil came from.
A little bit of Frank Miller, a little bit of Bendis, mm-hmm. a little bit of,
there's a little Kevin Smith in there. Yeah, there's
just a small amount of Kevin Smith, because I think the story
Catholicism stuff comes pretty heavily from Kevin Smith's run.
Yeah.
And you know, being Catholic is a part of Daredevil. It's
right.
It's built into his DNA. But Smith really explored it.
Right.
And you know, it was, I think, like, there's things that happened in that, especially with Karen Page.
Right.
That I would like to see happen in season 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, she could die. Maybe.
Maybe.
I would rather see, like, Bullseye be the one to take her out.
Yeah.
If they do decide to kill her off.
Right.
And, you know.
I don't want to see her die, because Deborah Ann Woll is great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Definitely.
I really liked her on True Blood. I really like her in this.
What I'd like to see is her character become, like, the character that's falling.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are episodes in the first season where she gets drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the character in the comic book was, she eventually was falling and became a drug addict and was an alcoholic and all that stuff. And
then she was redeemed and she was the radio host. And
right.
Like, kind of like in Jessica Jones, Patsy Walker's character.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like they took a lot from Karen Page there.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they can do that again. Maybe she becomes a blogger in, you know, honor of Ben.
Yeah,
you know,
that's kind of a possibility.
So
yeah, she's kind of a wild card with season 2. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I want to see more flashback with his dad.
Yeah,
I really liked like the stuff with Battle and Jack.
Yeah,
and that Battling
Jack Murdoch.
I really think his mom will show up.
Yeah, you said that in. Like, I'm trying to remember, because I don't read Daredevil all the time.
Right.
It's probably like once every 4 or 5 years I'll pick up like an arc.
I don't remember whose arc it was in, but I think it was Kevin Smith's
arc. I don't ever know. Because you said she was a nun.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was the Kevin Smith arc that she showed up in.
I think it's in the closet. I was going to say, I have the whole trade for that. Oh, no, it's right there. Anyway, but yeah, I don't remember that. I don't ever remember meeting his mom.
Yeah, well, so, the thing is you know it's his mom, but they don't say it's his mom.
Right. So
and I think it is. Yeah. I think it is the Kevin Smith one. Like, he gets so beat down at one point, he goes to the church and she's there.
He ends up at the church.
And she knows who he is. And that obviously, and that's what the whole thing, when Jack calls her and says, you know, I'm going to do something and you're going to have to watch out for him.
Yeah.
And that he knows that she's not going to be able to take care of him. She's already in the
nunnery and
obviously she's watched out for him enough that when Stick shows up, he's at the orphanage and, you know, he literally, Stick asked the Mother Superior, what about his mom? And she goes, well, that's difficult. And it's like, you know a little bit of Daredevil history, it's like, you know why it's difficult.
Yeah.
Now, some of the things I thought were cool is like Bob Gunton showing up as Leland Owsley.
Yep.
If you know a little bit of the history of Daredevil's villains, Owsley is one of his villains, the Owl.
Yep.
So Melvin Potter is a villain who becomes a friend of his.
Yeah.
The Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, they threw in stuff where I'm like, oh, that's cool. I don't know who that is.
They made some good changes. It was little Easter eggs. You know,
And the one we didn't even acknowledge, Rosario Dawson.
Well,
as the night nurse.
Rosario is going to be the glue that ties this entire universe together. So hopefully we'll see her back in season two.
Yeah.
It will definitely be interesting. But so Bob Gunton, if you don't know, he was the warden in Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
He always plays that like kind of smarmy, skeevy.
Yeah. The only other thing that I really remember him from was an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, where he plays the captain that's saying the Cardassians are building up an army.
That's right.
The one that O'Brien had served under him before.
Yeah.
And that was the only other thing besides Shawshank that I really remember him from.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of, when he shows up, he plays that kind of character. And he's just got that face for
it.
And, no, that was great. You know, Kingpin has really, Wilson Fisk has really become a Daredevil villain.
Yeah.
In the last, I don't know, what do you want to say, like 15 years?
Oh, I'd say.
Longer?
80s.
Okay.
The Frank Miller stuff really brought Kingpin to be a Daredevil villain
instead of because
he was a Spider-Man villain.
And I mean, even in the 1990s Spider-Man cartoon,
Kingpin was there.
He was the big bad overall.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where, I mean, in the Marvel universe, and we've talked about this before, in the Marvel universe, a lot of these heroes live in New York City.
Yeah,
so a villain like Kingpin is a street level villain, pretty much.
Yeah, more or less.
But every street level hero is going to have to deal with him at one point or another. And I mean, you know, obviously I think that would be a cool idea to have the overarching arc or the overarching story of all these characters
in the Defenders
for him to be the factor.
Yeah.
The main factor that of everything. Like he's manipulating everything.
Yeah.
And when the Defenders show up, you know, I don't know. I look forward to seeing, you know, maybe Jessica Jones show up this season.
Do you think she will?
I would hope they would do that.
Did they have Mike Coulter cast as Luke Cage when they were filming this? I don't remember.
No, he got cast when they were working on Jessica Jones.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously not going to see Iron Fist. You know, because unless they had plans and did some reshoots.
I think the whole thing that we might see with Iron Fist is a hint of Kuen Loan.
Yeah.
I think
that, we'll see Gal show up. That's what
I was
going
to say. Gal, to me, is more the Mystic.
Yeah.
And Nobu was more the Ninja.
Yeah.
And so the hand and all that more is what Nobu, because he was trying to, you know, bring in, what was it, the Black...
Oh,
I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, when he killed the little kid.
When Stick showed up.
Black Sky. And that was something from the comics.
I don't remember that. Like, that one I don't thing really I remember.
But yeah.
I can't remember everything. No. I can remember a whole lot of the comic book stuff.
There's too many comics that we like read and follow and all that fun stuff.
Well, and all the comics that have been read in the past.
Yeah.
You know, this season was awesome to watch. You watched it a lot faster than I did.
Well, and I watched it a couple
Actually got the girlfriend to watch it.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where, you know, she likes the Marvel Universe, the cinematic universe. And, you know, she enjoys Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter. And I was like, let's just check this out. Well, she really liked it. And
yeah, I think by the time you said, hey, let's check this stuff out, I was already texting you like, this was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm watching it again.
Oh, we flew through it because it was one of those things where it's like once we watched the first two episodes the night that it had gone on. And once we watched the hallway fight, it was like, okay, we got to watch the rest of this really fast.
As quickly as possible. Yeah, because I was on, my spring break had just started.
Yeah.
Because I was teaching at Miami that semester. And I had nothing to do that day, literally.
Right.
And I was like, all right, I'm going to watch as much of this as I can starting at midnight. And I think that was one that actually they put on a little bit before midnight.
Yeah.
And so by like 4 a.m., I was already 5 episodes in.
Right.
And I napped for a little bit, woke up, finished it out.
Yeah. And this, you know, I'll probably be done by middle of next week.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, I'll be done by Saturday.
Right. We'll watch a few, tomorrow night. You know, I won't be able to watch it tomorrow night. I got things going on. But, Sunday, we'll probably watch 3 or 4 episodes after I get off work.
Yeah, you'll get the vague text from me.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, no, nothing too spoilery.
Well, I think I do a pretty good job in that.
It's my hopes for this season with the Punisher showing up. It's
Yeah. So, I mean, this is John
Bernthal's awesome.
So, for people, if you don't know who the Punisher is, you are new to the planet, and welcome. Just real quick, describe for the people who the Punisher is and what he means to Daredevil in kind of this instance.
Well, the Punisher, for all sense and purposes, is just a killing machine. I mean, it's one of those things where Bruce Wayne's parents died and he went off and became the Batman and fought crime, but didn't kill anybody because his parents died.
And he doesn't want to ever cross that line.
In the Marvel Universe, Frank Castle's wife and kids were killed in a park in the middle of a mob gunfight. So Frank is literally just going to kill every mobster that he can get his hands on.
So, but the difference, you're drawing correlation between those two characters. The difference is Frank Castle was a Marine.
Yeah.
Bruce Wayne's just some spoiled rich kid.
Right.
You know, so he's killed
before.
Well, that's
what I don't know if they'll do that in the show, if he's going to be military.
I don't see how you can't.
But like I told you, I would have loved for the idea that he was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. And that's military.
Well, and that's what I mean. Like, to tie it to the Marvels.
The guy from Jessica Jones who was popping the red, white, and blue pills.
Nuke. Yeah.
Maybe tie it into Nuke's.
Right.
By group there, you know, which that they totally missed the boat not making him an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, and that's the thing. It's because this is in that Marvel universe. I mean, in the first season, they mention the alien invasion, the Chitauri invasion and that, and how the city's rebuilding itself. Yep. So my whole thing is, you know, why wouldn't you make Frank Castle an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yeah.
Have it where his family got killed by Hydra.
Or the Chitauri even.
Yeah. Hydra, but it's the Hydra or the mob.
Yeah.
Or the mob working for Hydra type thing. Just tie it together.
Well, and if you watched Agent Carter, you know, the mob was a big part of that. So.
Yeah. So it's like one of those things where, you know, nobody said anything yet. And obviously when it shows up, we'll know.
Right.
But I think he's going to just either be military, former military, or he's going to be a New York cop or
something
whose family gets killed. And he's just killing everybody. And it factors into Daredevil because Daredevil's had the loss of a family member and all that too. And those two have always had a relationship where it's they don't respect each other.
No, not at all.
They don't care about each other. I mean, at one point Punisher shot Daredevil Punisher is a means to an end.
Right.
And I mean, you know, Daredevil, Matt Murdock is, you know, following the law as closely as possible.
And Punisher never felt Murdock went far enough.
Right, yeah.
And it's always well, you will knock them down,
well, it's
but they
literally,
pop back
and
up.
It's not a spoiler, but in the preview, Frank says to Matt at one point, just one bad day. That's just one bad day, and you would be me.
Right.
And it's like, yeah. It's
and Matt can still get there.
Yeah, you know? Well, I mean, and that's the truth on the series. I mean, on the series compared to the comic book, Matt gets close enough to that darkness that it's like, you know, yeah, he understands it a little bit more. Now, where the Punisher ties into the Elektra part of the story, I'm curious to see if that will tie together, or if it's just he's going to have to deal with, you know, this vigilante who's killing mobsters,
right,
and the ex-girlfriend. Return, who brings a gang of ninjas to town.
Mystic ninjas at that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I'm really interested to see what they do. I'm excited as John Barenthal. I think this is a role tailor-made for him.
Yeah.
Because he is intense.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, if you've seen, like, I mean, pretty much anything he's been in besides The Walking Dead, it's like, yeah, he can play this character.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the, I can't remember the name of the tank movie, Fury.
Yeah.
I didn't like the movie at all.
He was good.
But he was really good in it. And it's like, you know, he's been pretty much...
There's a lot of bad stuff about that movie.
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf being, like, the main badness. I will say this. Like, if you want a good Punisher run, Greg Rucka's most recent run deals with the military aspect, the loss of family, and, like, him taking on, like, a quote-unquote apprentice.
Yeah.
Who she's pretty badass.
Garth Ennis, welcome back, Frank.
But I'm saying if you just want something that's kind of closer to what the Punisher is now,
that's a good place to start. A lot of good stuff that
there's a lot used. Of great just Punisher. Like the there's war a what if issue stuff.
Where it was what if the Punisher was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
and I'm like that's fun to just see them take. Speaking that. Of,
I read the Bruce Wayne Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Yeah,
thank you for that. All right, so we talked about Elektra a little bit, the Greek girl.
Mm-hmm.
She's an interesting character in the Daredevil mythos. They got her close to okay with the first Daredevil movie.
The Affleck movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was close.
Close enough.
Like, of how Fox typically handles things.
Right.
They did a really good job.
Yeah.
But... Just kind of again.
Let's not talk about the Abomination movie that they did with her.
Oh, they did a movie with no I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I know they did with her, and I watched it, and it was not good.
I don't know this actress that's playing her.
Yeah, I don't know anything about her.
You know, been in things, but probably an international actress.
Yeah,
she looks the part.
She looks just like Frank Miller's version. So.
What's cool is she has a face mask, so she has a mask too.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but I mean, like, they've not shown much with her.
No.
And, you know, Elektra in the comic book, they went to college together. She disappears. Well, like, it breaks up with him.
Well, because something happens.
Right.
So with her. She's an ambassador's kid, essentially. Right. And her father is killed.
Right.
And Matt tried to actually stop it. In the Frank Miller run, at least.
Right.
And, you know, he dons a, ties a bandana over his head. So just like the little black
thing
he wore over his face, except for I think it was yellow, tried to stop it, wasn't able to save him. And then Elektra leaves.
Yeah.
She leaves him a Dear John note and he's broken up about it. And she disappears and then
because
shows back up.
And that's the thing on the show that, you know, obviously that relationship's not the same.
Well, it might be because this could be the point where she's been gone.
Right. Well, I mean, she left, like in the show, like in the flashback, you know.
Yeah the Greek
she
girl,
left him, she but left he him, didn't so. Seem as broke up about it.
Well, and again, that was part, I think he was playing a part for Foggy.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of keeping the cards close to the vest, as it were.
Yeah.
So maybe he was extremely broken up, and that's, you know, because... After she left, he does become a bit more of a womanizer than he was. So,
and I think, like, with her coming in, that it's going to tie to the first season.
Uh-huh.
Because of the Japanese ties. And
the Yakuza and the
Well, yeah, the because, hand. I mean, they but talk about specifically how every property that the Japanese wanted, they gave them. Kingpin organization gave the Japanese part of their organization,
right.
Every property they wanted. So obviously something's happening with them and it's going to tie back to Stick showing up and the war.
Yeah.
I think that's what this season's mainly going to be about. It's and the then, war. You know, yeah.
Maybe they'll do it where the hand killed Frank's family.
Yeah, that's a possibility too. Tie it in that way.
But yeah, so the relationship with them, especially when she comes back, and in the comic she's killed by Bullseye,
right?
Who impales her on her own Psi,
yeah,
in front of Matt when he's just helpless to stop her, which they covered in the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie, which, you know, I mean, that they pretty much pulled that right off the panel. And again, Matt was helpless to save her. And then the hand brings her back.
Right.
And when they bring her back, kind of like, think Arrow when Sarah Lance is brought back.
Yeah.
She's not whole. They bring her back and she's not whole and she's an assassin. You know, it'll be interesting to see at what point Elektra's at in her story.
Yeah.
Like, has she died and been resurrected?
Right. Or has Bullseye showed up and we didn't see him, type thing?
You know, and if you want a good run of this, again, I'm going to go with Greg Rucka. He and Greg Land had a fantastic run on Elektra.
Yeah.
It's a standalone book in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And really well written, beautifully drawn. You know, it's
well,
definitely
even
one
like,
to check
I mean,
out.
You could go... I mean, check out Thunderbolts.
Yep,
Thunderbolts. When it was Punisher and Elektra were both on the team. So that would be kind of cool.
And, you know, I mean, this could be an opening for a Thunderbolts addition to the MCU.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Thunderbolt Ross will be in Civil War later this year.
Right.
I think today the article came out talking about the Infinity Wars, that we're going to see Marvel characters who haven't ever been introduced yet.
Okay.
So, you know, it would be... It's kind of... an interesting thing to see how they're going to set story up.
Right.
So, but no, Elektra's a really important character to Daredevil.
Yeah. I'm curious to see, like, you know, how they play her off with Karen Page.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see, you know, them playing Matt Murdock off with somebody who actually broke his heart.
Will, you know, and they could even do it where her and Karen never meet.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, where,
you
know, it's just
there was
like
enough
kind
of that,
like,
in the first season that, you know, people didn't cross paths.
Kind of like the whole Black Cat Spider-Man thing and Felicia Hardy and Peter Parker. It's, you know, four different people.
Right.
You know, they could do it that way as well.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm really excited. We're recording right now. It's like 7:30 Eastern time. And
you're going to take a nap and then stay up.
No, I'm not going to take a nap. I'm just going to stay up, take a nap. What am I, a baby? Don't answer that.
Well.
Anyway. All right. So, a lot of cool stuff happening this week. Batman versus Superman opens next week.
Oh, wow.
Is it next week?
It is.
Yeah. We're going to do a special review. David's going to come back and actually be with us for an entire episode where we'll talk about that. Johnny and David are much more excited about that movie than I am.
I'm the middle.
You are the middle.
I'm the middle ground.
Like, I'm going in with, like, so, like, you went into Cloverfield. I have no expectations.
That's probably why I'm the middle ground.
I just don't expect it to succeed.
Because I've seen enough previews that I'm like, oh, there's cool-looking stuff.
Well, they have, if you want to go check it out on YouTube, someone actually put together all 11 minutes worth of preview in chronological order.
I'll have to check that out.
So, which I watched, and it's like,
see,
I feel okay about parts of it.
If I'm hyped up about anything in that movie... it's seeing, well, a couple of things, actually. I look forward to seeing Affleck as Batman.
And Bruce Wayne. Batman.
But
Bruce
Wayne. And I look forward to seeing Wonder Woman. I'm not a big Wonder Woman fan, but I'm like, man, it's like, you know what? This looks pretty sweet.
So based on what we've seen in the previews of her and what we've seen in Wonder Woman, the first Avenger preview.
Yeah.
Like...
did you just call it Wonder Woman the first Avenger?
Yep.
Okay.
Because World War One instead of World War Two, she's got
the
shield. He's got shield.
It should have been the first Leaguer.
Anyway, but Steve Trevor is Peggy Carter.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's just they're ripping off Captain America the first Avenger. Is all I'm saying.
That's what you're judging.
But no, I am excited for Wonder Woman for sure. Yeah. So we've got that, and then we have Civil War.
I hope that Doomsday isn't the only villain.
He's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
I hope they've kept some things to their close to their vest. I will say this. If this movie does not do as well as Deadpool did in its opening weekend, Zack Snyder will not direct Justice League.
I didn't know he was lined up to be directing
Justice League. He's the director for both Justice League films. And, you know, it's not unheard of. Like, The Crow just lost its fourth director, you know, and they were already shooting stuff.
Why do we need another Crow?
We don't. That's the whole point.
Is it a remake?
Yeah, it's a remake. They're like starting over with Eric Draven.
Why?
Anyway. But yeah, I think the movie has a lot to prove.
Yeah.
I don't think anything other than Wonder Woman is actually set in stone as far as the DC Cinematic Universe.
Wonder Woman's already like,
I mean, I think they might be done with principal photography. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, you know, the one thing that worries me is, you know, as early as like maybe a month ago, they said they were almost done with it.
Right.
You know, and then this whole news that came out about a rated R, you know, and technically it won't be rated R. It'll just be called the unrated version.
Yeah.
You know, with Jenna Malone, who may or may not be Barbara Gordon.
Is she going to be in that version?
Yeah. So they cut her out of the theatrical release and they put her in. And the rumor is they do the Killing Joke scene where the Joker shoots her through the belly and the spine.
Well, and here's the problem with doing that, saying we're going to release this version. How many people aren't going to go see it in the theater because they're going to wait?
They might just wait because of Daredevil or Deadpool. Right. You know, they're just going to wait and say, hey, you know, I'll just wait until the fall and see it. Like, I think that was really stupid.
There'll be enough people that are going to wait and hear, like, if this movie is a bomb.
Yeah.
Or if it's really good.
So
that the first weekend, it's not going to do.
It won't.
It'll do well enough. Yeah.
So, like Deadpool. I mean, when we talked about this, I think last week already, and we talk about it constantly. You know, it's over $700 million right now. It's beaten The Man of Steel and Iron Man.
Right.
The first Iron Man, which was just a juggernaut.
Right.
You know, that has done well because of word of mouth. I mean, I still have people on my Facebook wall who are not comic book fans who are like, I went and saw Deadpool. I loved it.
When I think Iron Man was the same way.
It and was Iron Man word was of the mouth same way.
On that one.
And so this can, this, so word of mouth will either, I mean, it, most likely, if it's bad, word of mouth will torpedo this movie.
Right. And with the word of mouth isn't critics or anything at this point.
No, it's fans.
You know, it's the bloggers and the fans.
Twitter.
And, you know, the podcasters. So. You know, the people who people listen to now are just the people, the fans.
Yeah.
And it's like one of those things where, you know, any reviewer could come out and say, Batman versus Superman is the greatest thing since, you know, apple pie.
Yeah, since but I'm the not Dark
gonna,
Knight Rises.
Yeah, I'm not gonna.
Yeah,
believe any of that. I'm just gonna go into it with mild expectations.
I think the difference is though is the Batman franchise and tag on a movie carries a certain amount of weight.
Oh, sure.
That will get a certain number of people in.
It's just
that didn't go to see Man of Steel because they don't like Superman as much.
That's the problem. Is it is. They're it's so damn dark.
You know, it's they did one dark movie with The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And then they decided, well, this is how we have to do everything.
Right.
Whereas, like, look at and just compare it to Marvel. And we'll wrap up here in a second. I know we're kind of off topic here. But looking at Marvel, right?
Yeah.
Like, Iron Man was not a dark movie.
Right.
Iron Man 2 was not a dark movie.
They don't even, the thing is, they don't even have to look at Marvel. They could just go back and look at, like, the movies that were done. In the, you know, the Superman movie with Christopher Reeve, the Batman movie with Michael Keaton, it's not totally dark. There's a lot of brightness in that movie as well. And it's one of the other thing that bothers me is that the Marvel movies are for adults and kids.
Yeah.
The Man of Steel, in no way would a kid really enjoy that movie.
How is a kid going to come out of there and throw on a red towel and fly around his backyard and say, I want to be Superman?
Right.
You know? They're going to come out of that. And, what was the female Kryptonian general's name? It's not Furiosa, but it was.
I don't remember.
But it was kind of like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's who, like, you come out and be like, I want to be her. Yeah. She was badass, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And she's going to be in this one. She's in the sequel.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though she got sucked into the Phantom Zone?
Who knows? So.
Yay, we'll get Christopher Maloney back, too.
I don't think a human would do well in the Phantom Zone.
Who knows?
Maybe humans get, like, the Kryptonian Earth powers in the Phantom Zone.
You know?
You never know. They've never talked about that. Anyway. All right, guys. This has been episode 35 of the Infamous Podcast. And Johnny's licking his phone right now. Yeah. Licked his finger and then rubbed his phone for some reason.
Sorry, it had a smudge on it.
All right. So if you want to get in contact with us, if you want to get in contact with us, head to infamouspodcast.com. You can subscribe to the show through iTunes. And once you're there, leave us a five-star rating and review. And go ahead and type something in and let us know what you think of the show. The other thing, if you need to get a hold of us on the contact page, we're theinfamouspodcast@gmail.com. You know, definitely sign up for our email list because we're going to be sending out some newsletter type stuff and kind of things that we find interesting happening around the superhero world.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can find Johnny.
Facebook, Instagram, yeah. Twitter.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm too lazy to start a Tumblr.
And a Pinterest.
Well, Pinterest is just my own personal Pinterest. So, all right. So you can find Johnny on Twitter at
Johnny Potter.
And it's the same on Instagram, I do believe.
I believe so.
You can find me at Brian Tudor on everything, pretty much. Anything that's worth checking.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right, guys. So go watch Daredevil. Go see 10 Cloverfield Lane for sure. And we will talk to you guys next week about something.
Something.
Yeah, something.
Actually, Walking Dead probably.
Well, there will probably be a Walking Dead segment. Hey, we're just biding our time for Game of Thrones. So.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, guys. Have a great week.
Have a good one.